Hey folks, you're listening to The Idea Roastery. I'm Herman.
And I'm Jason.
And Jason, what apps do you have on your phone? I mean, just like, bar the basic ones. I know you've got like WhatsApp and your banking app, but do you have any ancillary apps that have specific purposes?
I've got a lot of apps. What I realize is that it feels like I use a very few apps day to day, probably like between 5 and 10. But if I look at my phone, there's probably over 180 different apps.
That's a lot of apps, man.
It's a lot of it's craft, and a lot of it is stuff that like I don't use but use frequently enough, or apps that I've downloaded for a single use that don't use, like things like Duolingo. You know, you download it, you get into like learning languages, and then you kind of forget about it. Another one which I found out yesterday while I was on a flight is that I've actually got a dictionary app. I didn't realize this. I always went to Google to find out what words mean. But actually, like during the flights, I couldn't access Google. I was just like, oh, I've got a little dictionary app, and I didn't even know I had it. So I've got loads and loads of apps. Some of the more popular ones I use are the social media ones, Spotify, SoundCloud, those kind of apps. But what I like about Android is that there's this feature that I've enabled where if you don't use an app for a certain amount of time, it will kind of like gradually switch off elements of it.
Down-regulate it.
Yeah. And I'd never put in there's this feature where you can access location without me consenting. So I only have that on like a few apps like Google Maps, but never, you know, never allow it all the time. But yeah, so I've got a lot of apps. I use them in a different, you know, amounts of ways in each different area.
And you got them all from the Google Play Store, I'll assume.
Yeah, I think there's one or two. So like there's a few times I've tried to create my own app that I've got like APKs on there. And then there's a few, like for work, there's like a couple that I had to install for like security purposes. It's so like my company will provide, they have like a security tool, and they provide the app and you basically download it and enable it. So that's not provided by the Play Store, but they have sort of migrated that to use the Play Store. But most of them are from the Play Store, yeah.
And do you have any progressive web apps installed?
Installed? No, I don't. Not at the moment.
That's fair. To be entirely honest, the only progressive web apps that I have installed are the ones that I've created myself. I've got three progressive web apps on my phone right now. There's the Just Sketch Me progressive web app, which is my company through pose modeling tool. Then I've got a progressive web app that just tells me the load shedding schedule. And then I've got one called Good Eats, which I'm using to track my calories because I'm trying to eat a lot of food so I can become a big beefy boy.
Yeah. One second though. What is a PWA? What do you define as a PWA?
A PWA is a native mobile application that can be installed on your phone that uses web technologies. So that's HTML, JavaScript, CSS. And it runs a little bit of extra JavaScript called a service worker, which caches and downloads the code to run offline. And so it runs as a native app would, although in some cases it has fewer permissions. Like I don't think you can access GPS, like device GPS, with a PWA, or maybe you can, considering the browser can. Okay, no, here we go. So yeah. I haven't run into any of these limitations, but there are limitations compared to building native apps. But it's got things like push notifications. It, for all intents and purposes, it is a way to run applications natively on your phone that use web technologies, and they're downloaded from the internet as opposed to through the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store.
Hmm. I mean, I guess more specifically, they're like browser rendered, right? So they kind of like, so I guess if you look at the landscape of building apps, right, you've got the native languages like Swift, Objective-C to some extent. I think it's not used as much. There's Java, there's the Java kind of Python one. I can't remember what that one's called, but they've got like the native programming languages that you use to build the apps, right? So that is like, I would say the hardest way to build an app is to build it natively from scratch in those languages. mostly just because like you either have to be like a good Java dev or you have to be a good Objective C or Swift dev.
Yeah, I'd say that hard is a relative term over there. Is that if you are a good Swift developer, you know, like the easiest way to build Apple apps will be using Swift, and then you've got tools like React Native, which compile down to your Objective C's or your Swifts or your Javas, but yeah. You use a web-esque yeah. technology to build them.
But those have those are never like so the native app is kind of like the sort of bar when it comes to like quality, because if you were going to build like a high quality like game, for instance, you probably, I mean, if you want to have access to graphics and the sort of full capabilities of the phone, it's better to do it in the sort of native languages,
or at least to compile it to the native languages. Yeah
The compile, though, because it's like there's nuance with, so the great thing about compiling is, or compiling from Flutter or React Native or some of those ones, is that you can build it once and kind of like compile it both, but I've never seen it be like completely sort of seamless. I think like some apps like Easy Equities, I think are done with that.
Yeah, you're forgetting that most games are built with game engines that get compiled down to render on both Android and iOS. So if you have a game that's built in Unity, say, it does get compiled down, and then you have to do the final export step through Xcode, which is the hardest step. So it is possible to do well. But I think just in general, the big difference between a PWA and a regular app is that a PWA is actually just a browser view with some additional code saying act like a regular app.
Yeah. So it hooks into the browser APIs. And like when PWAs first came out, I think they were very basic, i.e. they were just like a web view. But now the browser technology, like if you look at Mozilla, which kind of leads a lot of the stuff with Firefox and some of the Chrome stuff that's come in, like being able to use some things like local storage, for there's also offline mode. So a lot of it has actually come from the browser capabilities that are becoming really good. And then just adding that sort of app layer on top, so that instead of having to browse to a website, you're basically opening up an app instead, and that's like loading on your phone.
And the fact of the matter is that, you know, bar high fidelity things like games, most applications would run perfectly fine as a web app. And if it can run perfectly fine as a web app, then it is essentially a PWA without a service worker. So I built Just Sketch Me back in 2017 as a PWA, and my thinking at the time was that this was just the future of apps, right? Apps were going to be distributed via websites, where you go to the website and then you say, okay, install the PWA, and now you've got this native app running on your phone. And fast forward 6 years later, and very few people know about PWAs. And this isn't by mistake, right? Like to install a PWA on Apple, you have to open up the share menu, and then you have to scroll down to add to home screen, and it makes it look like you're adding a bookmark, but you're actually installing the PWA because the App Store doesn't want you to eat its lunch, right? It wants people to build native apps that go through the App Store so it can get its cut of all revenues, either from selling the app or selling subscriptions to the app or selling products through the app. It's got a very interesting and complicated fee structure, but it does not have that same oversight over the web.
The idea of running stuff in a browser and running it like that, I think what appeals to me and I guess most developers is the kind of like just the ease of distribution, right? So once you've built it, like anyone with a browser, and basically browsers are getting to a point where they're pretty much not homogenous, but they've got sort of core APIs that every browser has access to, unless it's Safari. And you just like have a link to a website, you just click it and it actually opens up. the problem with the accessibility part is it kind of ends at the browser, right? Because there's only a few, I would say, more niche customers out there who actually know about the actual putting it into your your home screen, right? So the actual like saving it as that. And maybe it's a fault of the browsers themselves for not making it like a one-click button, like in the actual app. But I think I tend to agree with you that from a distribution point of view, having apps go through app stores is kind of, you know, used as a bit of a blocker for most developers, right? In terms of like distributing your app, you kind of have to go with Play Store. You have to go with App Store. Just because like that usability outside of those platforms is just so difficult. And also for the lay person, I think they don't want to take that risk, because now when I'm thinking, even as a relatively tech savvy user, I still don't really trust anything that's not coming through those app stores. And so PWAs could be that option where you have like a sort of easy to install. But the thing is, when I think about it from a building an app and distributing it point of view, I don't know if it's going to be worthwhile, because people just won't know how to make use of that.
And unfortunately, that's exactly what I learned is, despite building it as a PWA, I now have it on the App Store. And in order to get it running on the App Store, what I did is I built a native application and I popped the web view inside of the application. But because I wanted to charge for subscription payments, I had to build a whole bunch of code that hooked into the web page that when you press upgrade, it opens up a screen that does an Apple subscription, because you're not allowed to accept any form of payment, not through the App Store, if you are downloaded through the App Store. And even further than that, you're not even allowed to suggest that this can be purchased somewhere else. I can't even say, go to our website to purchase the app. Instead, the app has to be purchasable through there, or for all intents and purposes, there is no upgrade that can be made there. Which is really annoying, because it was complicated to set up, and now every subscription payment has a 30% tax.
Yeah. So why is it bad for consumers though? Because I like, if I was Apple, I'd probably be arguing that it's more like it's secure because there is a certain vetting that goes on. Why do you think it's bad for consumers that you aren't able to have these workarounds?
No, so I actually think that it is good for consumers, because you do have this vetting process. I dislike it because I don't want to be beholden to Apple to release my apps, and I want to, you know, not pay 30, I don't want to give them 30% of every subscription. They're the second most valuable company in the world. I'm nowhere near that by any means. I would prefer to not like live in this feudal system where us peasants have to keep on paying the feudal overlord one third of our harvest. But as an end consumer, if you download an app from the Apple App Store, you can be relatively certain that it's going to be of a higher quality. And that it's not going to be evil. I mean, there, you know, things do slip through review, but, you know, you've got a pretty good chance of it being good. However, for my personal choice to go and move to SketchMe over to the App Store is that when people are looking for an app, they go to the App Store. And so there's this huge discoverability market that is accessible through the App Store. And so by putting the app on the App Store, people can find it at a lot much higher volume than if it's just like an iOS PWA on the website. And so it was almost a necessity for me to get onto the App Store just so that people could find me. And you could argue that if they are finding you via the App Store, then that justifies the 30% tax, because then it's not necessarily a distribution service, but a marketing service.
Yeah.
The problem comes when there aren't any other viable alternatives, which there are. It is the PWA. Mm-hmm. So when people get caught up in these wars, they're like, Apple is the only way to install apps on the phone. I'm like, don't forget the PWA, guys. Like, you could do this. I've done it. The fact of the matter is that they provide such a valuable service on top of it that it 30% is too much. I'll come out and say that right now. But like they are providing a service that I am willing to pay for.
Yeah, I think the line is where that value, what's the value trade-off that you're getting? And I think it's kind of evident. I think the day before this recording, basically yesterday, there was a fine issued to Apple itself. So the EU is obviously not very interested in having these kind of closed markets, monopolistic entities, and especially when it comes to digital technologies. So what they've done, I think it's the first fine for Apple by the EU. Google's had a couple already, so they're ahead on that regard. It was $2 billion dollars. That's US dollars, which I think
a lot of money.
Was like 0.05% of revenue. The original was supposed to be about 400 million, but apparently it's like some like speeding ticket kind of thing that they want to just like deter Apple from doing it. So how it came about is Spotify had the same problem as you, is that they weren't even allowed to tell customers that you could purchase Spotify on the website and then just use it as an app on iOS. And so what they argued is that it was bad for consumers because you're actually kind of inflating prices, right? Because now, you know, Spotify is not going to take that fee by itself, right? They only have music streaming process. I can't imagine they've probably got some margin, but their margins aren't exactly like fat, right? So they're going to just pass it on to consumers. And so what you're getting is, I guess, more expensive apps.
Just on that note, there's actually something a bit more insidious over there, in that that would, depending on how you argue it, be considered anti-competitive behavior from Apple, because Apple has a competing application to Spotify, Apple Music. And so if Apple Music and Spotify have the same base costs, the extra 30% that Apple charges on top of Spotify's subscriptions to users goes and inflates Spotify's cost by an additional 30%, making it a anti-competitive environment that both of these apps exist in. So there's definitely some antitrust stuff that has been going around there.
Yeah, I think a lot of a lot of it seems to stem from this the DMA, the Digital Markets Act, which is I think it's kind of in force already, but like in the next day or two, when I was researching for this podcast, there were like basically counters on, so any web advocacy or web openness sort of foundation had this like countdown where they're counting down to the day that it has to be enforced for real, right? Which is, I guess, what's provoking so many of these releases from Apple about how they're gonna first of all take care of customers in the EU. But it's really this Digital Markets Act that's kind of forcing all of these changes. And a lot of it is, it makes sense, right? You don't want to have a single player where you can have this sort of buying and selling of digital commodities or, you know, apps, taking such a large cut and sort of preventing businesses from making a living. I guess one of the other things that people are a little bit upset about was that there's now, depending on how your app is distributed, there was a question of whether they would, you know, charge users specifically to go into the EU market, because obviously as Apple, they have to create all of these sort of new technologies and stuff to actually just cater to the requirements of that Markets Act. So there's a lot of questions about whether that will mean that it's harder to develop apps for the EU market, first of all, whether it will be a cost involved. But I don't think they will be, because I think from my brief non-legal reading of the DMA, it's mainly targeted at companies that have a significant market impact in the EU, that are in at least three different EU countries. So I don't think it was going to impact small companies as much as I was initially worried about. But I think it is, what I don't like is it's kind of creating this fragmentation, right? Where you've got the apps that are developed for the US and the rest of the world, and then there's the apps that are developed from the EU. And what I've seen even is that some companies are going as far as, like, they're based in the UK or they're based in Europe. They're first deploying into the US and they're focusing on that market first. So they've only deployed in the US App Store. And what they're doing is they're just building their companies there. And then once they've got to a certain size, then they start to look at EU markets, which I think is not necessarily good for Europe and sort of that economic area. I guess you could argue that you'd be marketing to your own players and maybe you're preventing certain US companies from entering that market. But I don't think there's the technological sort of backing of like really impressive big companies. Maybe Spotify is one example. There's a few others like Klarna, but I don't see like that activity like leading to anything. So I think it might just end up being that there's US companies that are like USing and doing like their thing in America, but that they can't really enter the EU markets.
I mean, the US market is such a good market. It's like, if you're going to choose any market to go into first, choose the US market. For both my companies, Bear and Just Sketch Me, over 70%, if not 80% of the revenue comes from the United States alone. And that's just, you know, a couple of factors. People in the States are a lot more willing to live with their money. They earn a lot of money. And I think they're also just like a lot more willing to pay for software in general. Whereas, you know, I have purchasing power parity running on both my apps or both my services. And it means that, you know, it's the correct price for the purchasing power of that region. And despite that, the United States still just biggest, much more likely to upgrade, et cetera, et cetera. So it doesn't even come down to the price. It's just like a cultural thing. Americans are like happy to take out subscription payments where the rest of the world kind of isn't. But I think that there was this big controversy that happened about 2 weeks ago, where the EU legislated that Apple needed to support other browser engines because currently they only support WebKit, which is their Safari browser engine. And this applies to PWAs as well, because that uses WebKit in the background. Interestingly enough, for those who don't know, even your Chrome and Firefox on iOS still use the Safari WebKit. They're just wrapped as Chrome and Firefox. So this is changing. The EU legislated it. And then in the next, the beta release of the next version of iOS, PWAs weren't working anymore. People are like, hey, what's going on? And Apple came out, they're like, hey, listen, yeah, we're axing PWAs. We're not going to support them anymore. And they've been looking for a reason to ax PWAs for a while. I mean, the fact that they make it so hidden as a feature kind of goes to show that like they don't want to support this feature because they really want to just like make money from their app store. So I think they were like, there's this meme of a guy like shooting a person, and it's like Apple shooting a PWAs, and then he turns around. It's like, why would the EU do this? I do see that on the 1st of March, after a lot of backlash from developers and the world in general, they've walked back that decision, and the EU.
Also the EU, yes. So what I read from it is that there were companies that basically went to the EU and they filed complaints, right? Because now there's this DMA Act, right? So I think the Apple's comment was that we've got feedback from our users that it's not a good thing, but I think it was partly because of like a whole, the whole backlash. My question is, like, I'm not an Apple user. Like, so do you not have, do you use Chrome on your iOS?
I actually use Safari for everything here. I use Safari on iOS. I use Safari on my MacBook.
Yeah. Cause the other aspect of PWAs is that because it is like browser native technology, technically, like if what you're saying is true, I didn't know that WebKit, like Chrome uses WebKit on Apple devices. If this is true, then maybe even just using like the proper Chrome, like the sort of engine that runs under Chrome, would actually provide the sort of performance and interoperability that would make PWAs a little bit more accessible and a little bit more friendly. But rather than having like the full app experience, you could maybe just have a better browser experience. Because the thing is that, as I was saying earlier, it tends to be like, you know, Safari is always like trailing behind the other browsers, right? You always see like I think Firefox is a little bit ahead. Google's got a couple of stuff that they're ahead on. Microsoft Edge is basically just Google's engine wrapped around Microsoft. So they have quite good parity, but I guess they're coming up. But whenever I look at like the compatibility matrices, it's always like Safari is like way behind, or
you're forgetting Opera.
Opera. I mean, also like I think Brave is also something similar.
I mean, Brave is using the Chromium engine, so but it like I've been using exclusively Safari for the past 3 years, and to be honest, like that app engines have come so far that they're all pretty good. The reason why I use Safari for everything is because of that Apple ecosystem. Juju is logging into something, thumbprint on my phone and fingerprint on my laptop, because it integrates very, very well with Apple Keychain. And so everywhere I go, I never have to finagle password managers. It's just like log into the site, thumbprint, yeah. Log into this, thumbprint. But I'd say that if and when browser engines become more powerful, and they are, they're becoming more powerful day after day. I mean, you can go and you can play like full scale video games in browser.
Yeah.
Right. It's not the most efficient way to play video games, but with stuff like WebAssembly and everything, like, hey, you're good to go. Who's the owner of Fortnite who took Apple to court?
I have no idea. You mean EA? Is it EA?
No, I think it's Riot Games, I think, but it could be corrected. So they were they circumvented Apple's system for making payments. Mm. And then Apple removed their app from the App Store, and then they took Apple to court. And then Apple, I think, won that case, but they were very unhappy about it. And there was this whole like, hey, you know, let's have a serious talk about these taxes. So theoretically, if you can get Fortnite running in a PWA, well, there you can get it to run on your Apple device. And if PWAs are protected by EU law, EU makes up a big enough market that Apple isn't going to just like not allow that.
Yeah. Do you think that like, so obviously there's going to be a requirement for more interoperability, like different, app stores, different web engines, those kind of things. Do you think it's going to affect the usability that you said you enjoy so much about Apple? Do you think there's going to be a lot of challenges having, oh, I downloaded this from so-and-so app store that's not the official app store, and now it doesn't work with these and these features? Or
I don't think another app store would survive. I honestly don't. Is that you've got a push from developers to create another app store, but you don't have a push from users, right? Users would hate the idea of another app store. You know how people like were pretty thrilled about Netflix back when Netflix came out because you could get everything with one subscription, but then HBO had their own subscription, Disney Plus had their own subscription, Showmax had their own subscription, and now people are like, well, I'm like, you've made this too much, right? And so I think by adding extra app stores, it might satisfy a bunch of cranky developers, but the people aren't going to use them in the same way that, like, again, a PWA is kind of like a different app store. You're just selling an app via your site, and people don't use them. And this has been around since 2016. So, like, yeah, cool if there was another app store, but I don't think it would actually be used with any sufficient volume.
I mean, like, arguably, you could say the Play Store could maybe have an offering in Apple or something like similar to that. I think that's where it comes. Or even like if you think of like large language models and stuff like that, like an OpenAI store, right? You know, that might be something that's, you know, they've got enough money to build, and maybe it's worthwhile for them to have that. Because I guess now,
I know, but if I were a developer and I were going to release, let's assume that I only had enough energy to release my app on one store, it would be the Apple App Store. If I had a choice on whether to release it on either Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, it would still be the Apple App Store, because like the such valuable users.
Yeah, but I think capitalism has shown that it is a profitable business to be the platform, right? It would be a tough challenge, but I mean, that's where, market efficiencies and that come in, right? They put it on the table. Either Apple's gonna have to, I mean, they'll either continue to charge the fees that they do, or there's gonna be some competitor who's gonna be like, well, we do the same thing. We're like really cheap and we're like a bit more scrappy. You don't get the full, so you still get the security, but you don't get the full thing, but we'll charge 10% rather than like the full 30%. Is Apple going to drop their prices because maybe they do already have some cost factors that are involved in that they need to, keep parity. But maybe you will get an entrant that's, not unbacked, like they'll have to have some sort of funding behind them. I doubt it's going to be an open source project, but you could have someone go after that market.
Well, a lot goes into it, right? Is that you need to have
Yeah.
reviews on an app store. You need to have like a proper review process, and that does cost time and money. And you need to have curation and all that good stuff. I'd say that, and again, I don't, I am not a marketing exec at Apple. I don't know what
Yeah.
the intricate details are of the system over there, but my uninformed opinion over here would be that if Apple went and slashed its fees in half for everyone across the board, 15%, right? I think people would be pushing for an alternate app store a lot less because, like, yeah, 15% still kind of sucks, but you have payment processes that go all the way up to 10%. So, like,
It's almost it. Yeah, it's almost like they have that in their back pockets, and when they do feel threatened, they could do that. But while they're still kind of a dominant player, it doesn't make sense to like slash the prices just yet. And maybe that's what we'll see, is just they'll continue for a while, maybe some competitors, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the fines and stuff to see if they get any more. But I think $2 billion is quite a big parking ticket.
$2 billion is not a small amount of money by any means. Hey folks, if you enjoyed listening to this episode of the Idea Roastery, give us a review on Spotify and share us with your friends. Catch you next time.
Cheers.